We're the Pragmatic Doulas.
This is a podcast where we talk all about birth and other interesting things.
Birth may be a goddess, but she doesn't want to be worshipped. She wants to be respected. She doesn't want incense. She wants
common sense. Good Monday morning, everyone. It's me, Kim, from the Pragmatic Doulas. Unfortunately, this week we had a few hiccups. We have Suzanne doing some family stuff in Miami, and Stephanie at a birth, and me just having the worst week ever. So we're going to have to do an encore this week. But first, our land acknowledgement. I would like to recognize and acknowledge the land upon which I live, raise my children, work, and support birthing parents is the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples, and is now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people. While a land acknowledgement is not enough, it is an important social justice and decolonial practice that promotes Indigenous visibility and is a reminder that we are on settled Indigenous lands. Let this land acknowledgement be an opening for all of us to contemplate a way to join in Indigenous movements for sovereignty and self-determination. We hope that you enjoy this encore presentation of a episode we did back in August of 2020. And we will see you again next week. Have a good one. And we are go. Hello.
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 Hi. Hello. And welcome to the Pragmatic Doulas podcast.
This is your sexy voice Pragmatic Doulas podcast.
We're doing this week's episode completely ASMR.
ASMR. You totally listened to the MFM podcast this week. I just listened to it, literally just finished listening to it before I came on this call.
I was going to when I was mowing the lawn, but I don't have any headphones right now.
It was a good one. Did you listen to it, Steph, this week?
No, I have not listened to it yet.
I have never heard that story of the Chowchilla kidnapping.
Whoa.
Who the hell kidnaps an entire school bus full of children?
I don't know. That was an episode of FBI before that.
And the school and the bus driver.
Yeah.
The well, nerve.
Now I want to listen
where
to it.
Where did that happen?
Where did it happen?
Where did it happen? Chowchilla, yeah. California.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, just a small town or something close to where Karen grew up. Close to where she grew up in Petaluma, and they literally just like went on the bus and then they put the kids in like an underground bunker and they escaped. Like they all put their wits together and escaped.
That was totally an FBI Most Wanted episode, like at least 3 months ago.
It probably was. I mean, what a freaking awesome story. Some of these kids were 5 years old.
Yeah.
Like, bitch, we gotta go.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. So awesome. It was a great story. It was a great episode. George's story was good too. So listen to it. If we don't account for a good portion of their listenership, then we're not doing our job right. Cause we talk about them all the time.
It's true.
That's the truth.
I feel like I like super want to meet them now that we're like all podcasters.
Of course. Now we're on equal footing. We can discuss the industry.
It's true.
Oh my God.
They're like the Penny Simpkin really for us of podcasting, right? Like they're
Yeah.
They're like that upper echelon of you started me in this.
Yeah. So
I must meet you.
That's right.
We must be friends.
I also hold Kristen Meisner and Jolenta Greenberg, but especially Kristen Meisner, God damn it. Because before I started listening to MFM, I used to listen to Gretchen Rubin's Happier, which is a great podcast. And she was the producer for that podcast for a long time. And then she moved on to have her own podcast, which I love, called By the Book. That's the one I've told you guys about where they... Yeah. They live by a self-help book for 2 weeks and then they talk about it on their podcast. So she is one of the co-hosts on that podcast, along with Jolenta Greenberg. So, and she just wrote a book too that's called How to Start a Podcast, or So You Want to Start a Podcast.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, so she has that book out. Yep. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Yeah.
Roger's my current physiotherapist, and he's been enjoying binding me up with long black tape and then stretching my leg out and smiling.
What?
I'm sorry. Like
some kinky
long
sex
black tape. What?
Yeah. Yes. Stretching it's your like leg out. What?
Yeah. That's it. He's stretching my leg out. I'm not stretching his. No, it's like this long black physio tape, and then you bind my foot super, super tight for like 5 minutes and create traction on the heel with these long red bands, and then hold that, and I have to like bend my feet and my foot in different positions and then let it go, and then I have to walk on it as blood rushes back to it.
Okay.
And I'm supposed to do that daily for 40 minutes, 5 minutes on, 5 minutes off.
What's wrong with your leg?
I rolled my ankle a few weeks ago, yeah, and it still wasn't getting better, no matter, even though I did all the things I used to do when I'd have like stress fractures. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I decided not to ignore it anymore.
Now there's a good lesson.
There's a good lesson. Don't ignore things when your body's telling you it's fucked up.
Look, yeah, when you're 20, ignore all you want. When you're like 55,
yeah,
you're fucked. If you don't treat that shit, you're done.
Yeah.
Welcome to arthritis town.
That's right. I used to just use hockey tape on my feet to tape them up when they were sore. But doesn't work anymore.
My feet just never got sore.
Get out.
We used to go.
Okay. So this weekend coming up is carnival weekend. So Saturday would have been Caravana Day if COVID wasn't happening. And not recently, but in my younger days, there's this stupid little fruit flag. in my younger days, Caravana could not miss me and my friends. I've been going to Caravana since I was 13. Okay. And we would start at the beginning of the parade route and move all the way to the very end of the parade route. Okay. So all friggin' day in the sun, when it was crowded, when it's crowded, when you used to be able to jump up in the streets, that's what you would do on University Avenue from beginning to end. One year, I swear, I was wearing these sandals and somebody behind me stepped on the strap of my sandal and I moved forward and popped it off. I just threw my sandals in the garbage and just kept going and bare feet. Went home on the subway.
No shoes.
With disgusting, the dirtiest feet I've ever had in my life. And just went home on the subway. Didn't feel no way at all.
Yep. I just want to throw up a little in my mouth.
Yep. And my feet were not sore. Not sore. I can't say that anymore. I don't do Caravana anymore because I don't do crowds in the hot sun for hours and hours anymore. So it'll be a sad weekend for the people who are used to it. But
am I the only one that didn't realize it was a long weekend this weekend?
Simple day.
I'm like, what are you talking about? It's August. Oh yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I guess it is.
It's Emancipation Weekend.
Yeah.
So August 1st is Emancipation Day, recognized as Emancipation Day for, I don't know other places do it, but I know that practically all the nations in the Caribbean recognize it as Emancipation Day. And it's not like a universal thing, but they just chose that day. Different countries have their own different days. Jamaica has August the 4th is our Independence Day, independence from colonialism, but Emancipation Day is emancipation from slavery. And so it's celebrated now all over the world. And I don't know if that was the reason why this weekend was chosen for Caravana, because it's close to that time. And then on Monday, Simcoe Day,
which is
often just called a civic holiday and discounts the efforts of John Graves Simcoe, who fought to have the End of Slavery Act passed in Upper Canada, which is, you know, the
of all of the,
yeah, absolutely. That was, He was the lieutenant governor of Upper Canada. And I know this because we were homeschoolers and I made my kids learn all the significance of every holiday.
And I think it's only acknowledged here in Ontario, isn't it? Simcoe Day?
Other provinces do have it as a civic holiday, which is what most people call it, a civic holiday. But technically, it's to commemorate John Graves Simcoe. I mean, he did a bunch of other stuff, but that ending slavery thing, that was one of my favorite things.
Pretty big. Well, then you know what? I'm going to raise a glass to Mr. Simcoe this weekend.
One statue we don't have to pull down.
There you go. There probably isn't a statue of him.
Yes. One last thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here thinking about you coming home from Caravana on the subway in your bare feet, Suze.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, I think I would rather walk outside in downtown Toronto in my bare feet rather than on the TTC. But then I just remembered at my prom night, we all wound up at a hotel downtown and someone stole all my clothes and they stole my shoes. So I had to go home barefoot on the subway the next day in my prom dress. So I did it too. And it was gross. God,
in your prom dress. Well, yeah. Here's another story of another time that my shoes they weren't broken, but they were stolen. My boyfriend at the time and I went to Hyde Park one evening for a romantic picnic.
Did you?
Uh-huh. The picnic got so romantic that we were under the blankets, we had brought blankets and stuff, right? And then it got darker and darker. So after when we were ready to go home, we were just like feeling around all over the ground looking for our stuff. And what was missing? My purse that had all our money in it and my shoes. El Gonzo, somebody walked by, saw us busy under the blankets, not paying attention, and just quietly took my purse and my shoes. So we had to go to Hyde Park Station and beg for money to get on the subway. And again, I went home in bare feet.
Good Lord.
But thoroughly sexually satisfied.
Well, that's good. Oh, my God. Stories like that. Come on.
I've got stories. I mean, next week I'll tell you about how I didn't go to my prom. And why I didn't go to my prom. The prom dress was bought. The hair appointment was made. My friends and I were all...
We know that story.
Do you know the story of why I didn't go to my prom?
Yeah. Did
I? I don't remember. I want to know now. Tell me now.
That same boyfriend, who I later married and divorced. I went to a party with him and got so drunk that he was afraid to take me home. Because I was like passing out drunk. So instead of taking me home and just dumping me on my doorstep, which he should have done, he brought me to his brother's house. And I spent the whole night at his brother's house and didn't go home for the whole night. My parents freaked out so much. They called the police. My entire family came over because I was not that kind of person who just didn't come home. I had a son. And I was a very responsible teenage mother. Except for drinking too much at a party. I was still a teenager. And so I was grounded. Didn't go to my prom.
Yeah.
Wow.
Had to take the dress back in shame. Brought it back to the Eaton Center. Cancel my hair appointment. Disappoint all my friends. One of my friends didn't go because I wasn't going. My best friend. Oh. In solidarity. You didn't go. Yeah.
Wow. I'd have gone.
She should have. In hindsight, she should have gone. Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
Oh. Now you know that she prioritized that friendship, that the emotion and passion back at that time, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
That's a real deal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so how is
we're all yawning our faces off right now.
I'm sleepy. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, it's only 1:17 in the afternoon, but I'm sleepy.
I know. I'm desperate for a nap.
Yeah. I'm going to take a nap after this. Damn it.
I got to take Will to work.
Oh.
I also need a nap because I did, like, my foot was not having the walk today, so I decided to do 50 laps. And now after I get out of the pool, I feel like I need to crawl under the blankets with a nap. I'm going to do my very best to read our land acknowledgement, but my eyes are barely staying open too.
But I can do it. Your best. You can do it, Duffy Moon.
Are you guys ready?
Ready.
All right. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the land on which I raise my family and make my living as part of the treaty land and the territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit. For thousands of years, Indigenous peoples inhabited, well, I got to make this bigger, cared for this land. In particular, I'd like to acknowledge the territory of the Anishinaabeg, Huron-Wendat, Haudenosaunee, Sani, Ojibwe, Chippewa peoples, and the land that is home to the Métis, and most recently, the territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, who are the direct descendants of the Mississaugas of the Credit. We have much work to do to heal those we have harmed, stolen from, and continue to fail. Let this be the time. Thank you.
Where did you find that one?
Yeah, that one's good.
I went to the kids' school because I loved this. I think I told you when I went to their high school, each day a different student comes to say the land acknowledgement. And I really remember really thinking about how it sounded and how it was expressed. And so I took a part of that and then I added the bottom end on to myself. The fact that we have much work to do still, like acknowledgement is only acknowledgement. We still have action that needs to be done. Holding our government accountable, holding ourselves accountable, being aware, all of those steps that make change, that actually make a difference in the lives of those people who we've, fucked over.
I wonder what would happen if we started reading land acknowledgements at the beginning of our prenatal classes, Kim. I'm not going to do it.
But no, I don't know.
I wonder what would happen. St. Michael's Catholic Hospital, considering the Catholic Church is one of the biggest offenders against Indigenous people.
Well, true. I wonder if they start their board meetings at St. Mike's with that.
I doubt it.
Yeah, all those white guys whose pictures are on the back wall of that boardroom, you fucking think so? Not likely.
Those are just the chairmen.
Right, the chairman of the board.
Yeah, so I don't know what the rest of the board looks like.
No, I don't either.
But who could suggest it?
I don't think it hurts.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead and suggest that.
All right. Shoot them an email and say, hey, yo.
Just don't tell them who you are and that I'm not affiliated with you. I like my job. It's the only money I have coming in.
Let's not mess with the income stream.
Yeah, fuck. I don't even know if I got paid this week. Let me just check.
Yeah. And while I mean, it's
fucking likely.
50-50.
Yep, nope, nothing so far.
And it's 1:21, so it's unlikely that it's going to happen.
So, yeah. Don't know how the bills are getting paid this week.
Tighten your belts, children.
Fuck, I love my life. All right, what are we doing? Let's entertain these people.
Language. And I'm not talking about swearing.
I'm
going
to fucking swear if I want to.
Fine. That's what I have to say about language.
Yeah.
Who came up with this idea for this topic? The person who came up with the idea needs to introduce the topic.
Kim.
That's you, Ms. Fernandez. You're muted or something. Can't hear you.
Sorry. Sorry, I am muted. So I was on Facebook because God knows I hate that place. And I'm purely masochistic and like to punish myself on a daily basis with all the shit that's on Facebook. Anyway, so I was on there and there was somebody had posted a meme basically, or a picture with a couple of very cute baby feet, and it said, a healthy baby is going to come from a healthy mama. And then somebody commented that about this particular picture that, you know, that we need to stop this kind of messaging already. Basically what she said is, or what they said is, it is so elitist and trauma uninformed. This is why I felt I didn't belong in the world of holistic nutritionists, where these ideas without context often sprout. So, I mean, I think that's it. I mean, we mentioned before we started recording that, you know, yes, healthy babies can come from healthy mamas or healthy birthing people, but sometimes they don't. And sometimes healthy babies come from incredibly unhealthy birthing parents. And then there's, I mean, there's...
And then sometimes unhealthy babies come from healthy parents.
Exactly. And that's the, that's where this discussion of it's making those broad statements, you're making it from a place of privilege, and you're saying these things so that people will use your services, that you, in order for you to have a healthy baby, you have to do this. And that's not true.
Yes. It makes a lot of presumptions, and it's very narrowly focused.
And there's a lot in the birthing world that is narrowly focused.
And it, and especially because it's coming from a person who's promoting their services, it also presumes a definition of health that fits that person's paradigm or whatever. It doesn't include other views of health. What is health? You know, for somebody who lives with chronic illness, health means something different than somebody who has absolutely no issues, health issues to deal with. It's a different thing. So having 2 good weeks where you're not in pain can be somebody's definition of health. I'm not in pain this week, so I feel really healthy, even though you're still walking around, you're still officially dealing with a chronic issue. So whose definition of health are you using? And it's simply not true. It is true, but it is not enough, which I find
it's
is
not
a lot
100% true. Yeah. It's not, it is true, but it's not, true. It's not always true.
Yeah.
And it place what it does is it leaves a message behind that not only is your health your responsibility, but if it, it leaves that residual message that if your baby is born unhealthy, you did something wrong. There's a blame factor to that. Yes. It's not inspiring. It comes across where initially it sounds like, oh, that makes common sense. But afterwards, when an unhealthy baby is born to somebody who did all checked all the boxes, mm-hmm. it leaves you with the message afterwards, I must have not done something. What didn't I know? How did I fail?
Yep.
You know, as a parent, as someone who's growing a baby, I have to tell you, when I first saw that post, you know, it's, I think it started out with rant, you know, trigger warning rant about language. And the very first thing I saw was healthy babies come from healthy moms. My first thing about language was, okay, first of all, not all babies come from moms.
Yeah. Well, that whole word mama was like, whoa, wait a minute. Why? Yeah. I don't like that.
That quote, that post is current. It's not like it was from, you know, 20 years ago when we were all doing that.
Yep.
And it is interesting to see that although where we are, I think everyone is kind of, many people are still in the learning curve of he, she, they, moving from mother, father to birthing parent, things like that. And there's so much room for grace, you know, and grace when someone, you know, corrects you and things, you know, thanks, you're right, you know, quick, that's right, birthing parent. But when you are choosing, it's when you're talking, I think it's one thing because you're kind of in that moment. When you're choosing to put something out on social media, I'm very surprised by people who still choose to only use mom. And it disheartens me because although I am a mom and I do identify as full on female and full on woman and everything, there's as many people who might even not say it out loud who don't identify that way but are birthing people. And it hurts me to know that they're hurt when it's like clear exclusion when you say something as simplified as healthy babies come from healthy moms. Then again, it's hurtful in a different way, not just somebody who grows a baby and they come and you treat your body well and your baby comes out unhealthy. But now to compound that, you're also not included in the support that might be around that because you're not what someone else would call a mom, because you don't identify that way.
Well, it's funny. I'm in these mom groups for some stupid fucking reason. I really need to get out of there. And every post starts with, you know, hey mamas, I'm pregnant and this is what's happening, and da da da. Or hey moms, what is your husband like? Blah blah blah. I'm like, okay, well, not everybody on here has a husband. Yeah. And not every, like, I can because I've been so focused on trying to use good inclusive language, I see it so much now when it isn't being used. And it's like, I can totally see why anyone would feel that this group would not be safe for them if they did not identify as cis, het, married, you know, all of the, and this group had, like, one of them has like 30,000 people in it.
Yeah.
And it's like, so that there's people in there that I absolutely do not identify with being a single mom. And there's times where I see these on these things, hey ladies, on doula boards. And when this first started, when language started to become sort of really focused on and stuff, there would be a person that would be like, hey, we don't all identify as ladies. And I thought, and I, in the beginning I was like, oh, that seemed kind of harsh. But now I'm like, I want to be the one that goes, hey, we don't all identify as ladies.
Yeah, that's right. Pointing out the fact that you are excluding me and other people, or that you are excluding other people, is as harsh as the truth. That's it. As harsh as the truth that you can handle, that's as harsh as it is, but it is just the truth. Yeah. And you said earlier, Steph, that, you know, there's lots of room for grace. Depends on who is on the other end. Some people, it depends on who the person is that's saying it. Sometimes there is lots of room for grace, and sometimes there isn't. Sometimes that's just enough.
No, and actually, I mean the person who's going to be corrected to have grace when someone corrects you.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes, that's important, that we all need to have some humility and grace. And hey, listen, and understanding, yes, we're all learning, but when somebody corrects you, don't double down on your mistake. That's what drives me insane.
Yeah, it's the doubling down that, no, I am right.
Yes, or here's why I, or it makes, they, sometimes people will, they'll, well, I use the word moms or ladies or whatever, and I think it's appropriate, and here's why. And so I reject what you're saying. I mean, oh my God.
Yeah.
So language is power.
And that's, and I mean, that's the other thing too. Like, when you're throwing something out there into the world, mm-hmm. maybe you do have, I mean, maybe that is, just to play devil's advocate, I mean, maybe for this particular person who used the word mama, maybe that is their target market, and maybe that's who they're going for. However, it completely negates all these other people that don't identify as mama, that don't, you know, have that same sort of vision of what they're, who they are. And I think, especially like what you were saying, Steph, like when you make a mistake, like when I'm talking in class, I still make the odd slip of saying, you know, birthing parent or partner. I mix up partner and dad a lot. But yeah. I have to remember that that isn't necessarily true either, even though they're, you know, I have a whole screen full of, you know, male who look male and look female. Yeah. I can't make that assumption. So, but I will slip up, but then I correct myself. So I jump to the correction actually fairly quickly. But this person sat down at a screen and made a conscious decision to type out that stuff where they could have deleted it before it was sent, and typed it out. And that's what they said.
Yeah, and writing and talking are
two different things. Like when your brain is in gear and you're like, and you're going through, and you're, especially with us, like, I don't know about you, but my classes are basically in my head as a script. And it just, like, I fucking say the exact same goddamn thing every single time. So when I do mix up, it's because I'm like falling back on a past script or something that's in my head.
Yes. But and I haven't yet figured out a smooth, eloquent way of replacing mother with birthing parent or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's sometimes when you're talking along, it's like a shorter word pops out as opposed to the mouthful of like birthing parent or breastfeeding parent or things like that. But when you
thought,
sorry,
just before it leaves me.
Okay.
It happens. When you're doing your Zoom calls and your Zoom classes and stuff, and you're—I don't know if there's like an opportunity to touch base with all of the people signing up ahead of time, but you know, something that we all do on our, you know, sign-offs and stuff on email and such is that often we haven't done it here on Zoom on our cameras here, but having your name and then
your pronoun,
he/she, yeah, your pronoun, having that up there, that might be. I don't know if that's helpful in some of the communications. I'm not sure how it would apply in Zoom, but well, I mean, I put it everywhere else.
First of all, I'm not doing any more work. That's the first thing.
And I think really people who identify as he, she, if you call them a birthing parent, they don't care. Like it's,
that's right. It's not taking away from their experience. So what I have done, I've only taught the one Zoom class so far. So, and then I remembered afterwards that I should have included this, but what I had started doing in my in-person classes is making a little speech at the beginning, you know, when we're doing all of our stuff. And I do say, I'm trying really hard to use inclusive language in my classes. And I am maybe going to make, you know, flub up, please understand that I'm still figuring this all out. And my tongue is really old and it's used to saying things a certain way. I'm trying to retrain it to be more inclusive. So I'm just putting that out there. That's it. I say that at the beginning and then I try really hard to stick to that. And I know that the more I try and the more I practice, the easier it will become. So that is a benefit of teaching these classes, is that it's forcing us to have that practice. Whereas if you're not teaching classes and constantly speaking to this group of people who could be anybody, you're probably going to struggle with it a little bit longer.
Yeah.
That's true.
By the way, I think we should say, instead of just assuming and centering, making ourselves the center, we all three of us identify as she, her.
Yes. Yes.
Unless you have a surprise for us today.
No surprise today.
Not today, no.
Not today.
I can see how in class settings, sticking with they and birthing persons and inclusive language overall, regardless of what somebody might put up, would just be simpler in the sense of that retraining, Suzanne. Because you won't always be teaching within the same class. So using that across the board. I know for me, when I think about the way my brain works and my old tongue works, that would be, that's part of the training. That's a part of the rewiring to feel like a safe place for people and to want to be a safe place for people to come speak with me and not inadvertently hurt somebody.
And how about your contracts and your stuff that you put out in your doula practice and your website and your groups that you might run personally? Everybody has got the stuff that they put out in the world, your Instagram posts, your Facebook posts. That's all about language also. It's about language. It's about imaging. Do you consciously choose to have image of diverse families? And I'm not just talking racially diverse. I'm talking sexual orientation. I'm talking trans diversity, like all sorts of diversity that's out there. All of that makes a difference to having people feel welcome in the space that you are trying to create for possible clients or other doulas, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I periodically, I mean, literally, actually, every time I send out a contract, I will go through it and just make sure that I have, you know, put the birthing parent, I have put partner, I have put, you know, not having like labeling that isn't inclusive.
Using non gender neutral language.
Yeah.
And you can't assume anybody's gender and not assuming people's marital status by referring to every male appearing person as a husband.
Exactly. And I mean, I'll periodically go through the website as well just to make sure that I haven't missed anything, that the pictures feel inclusive, that, you know, again, that the language feels inclusive, even in the blog posts and whatnot, that, you know, if I learn something new and I go back and I find something that violates what I've learned, then I'm going to change it. When you know better, you do better. And I'm going to do that. And that comes from constantly learning, but also constantly changing what you're putting out there. So you have to always go back and look and say, okay, this is what was happening before. That doesn't feel all that inclusive. So we need to change that. And we need to fix that so that it looks, so that not that it just looks better, but that you are doing better.
Yeah. I have not gone through my website yet. I do need to do that. I haven't done it yet. I haven't looked at my website for months and months. I haven't even glanced at it.
I do it actually more often than probably the normal person does, but that's just because it's who I am.
There was, I think it was our friends at the Dynamic Doulas of London. Maybe it was them. I think so. Who said that they actually did a buddy system. They did a call out for a buddy system for you to review each other's websites and each other's contracts and stuff, like buddying up with somebody. Because sometimes we get so stuck in our own language, we glance over things without even realizing we're doing it because we've seen it so many times. But having a set of fresh eyes on it with someone you trust is for a great way to do it too.
Yeah,
like call out some, I think that's a great idea because you might miss, so often we miss things because they're just, we become blind to them because they're just right in front of us all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Fresh eyes.
Yeah. And sometimes it's not a small change. Like it doesn't have to be your whole 3-page contract or a giant blog post, but that Facebook post that was put out, that was called out was simply
one line.
It was one line.
Yeah.
Healthy baby comes from a healthy mother. There's so much wrong with that sentence. That's all it was in that, just that one phrase.
One sentence.
So problematic. Yeah. So it doesn't, sometimes it packs more impact when it's like that because it comes out at you immediately and in a way.
I was telling you guys, there's one that really burns my ass. So there's one that comes out, you see it periodically where it says, you know, having a baby is like falling in love on the first date.
Bullshit.
It is so much bullshit. I did not, and I felt horrible when I saw it the first time because when I first saw Will, and I've told this story, I did not love him. I did not want to have anything to do with him. I didn't have that overwhelming glow of, oh my God, this is my baby. Life is complete. Everything is wonderful, blah, blah, blah. My phrasing was, get that fucking thing away from me. So when every time I see that, it's like, I have to correct in my own head, no, there's nothing wrong with you. You didn't do anything wrong. You just needed a few more dates to fall in love with this little individual. And that's okay. And I will say that in my classes too, as one of the things with postpartum mood disorder is, you know, you may not like this little creature when they first come out, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with you. You just need a little bit more time to get to know them.
You might be fucking tired. You might be fucking bagged and just be like, the last thing on your mind is, you know, it's more relief that the thing is out of your body.
It's relief. That this labor that you've been going through for 3 days is finally over.
Exactly.
Okay. I say that all the time. That overwhelming maternal love and devotion is a bill of goods that we've been sold by our Western culture. Like, look at this picture behind me. Like, this is not the epitome of all of that. I mean, they're sleeping. I have this Gustav Klimt print in my bedroom. But I say that all the time, that you, and you know what I ask people, I say, do you remember when that you, do you remember that first date? Do you remember those first few weeks with your partner? Most of the time, the people in our classes are partners, like life partners. And do you remember falling in love? And do you remember when you couldn't wait to get to the place where you were meeting and you've got that feeling inside of you and all you could do is think about them and you couldn't work and you couldn't eat and you couldn't sleep because you were so head over heels in love with this person? And so now, 5, 10, 15 years later, do you still feel that way? Because life doesn't work like that. No relationship can sustain that level of passion and infatuation. Those things come in fits and bursts. And what love is a verb, which is what we always forget. People are constantly looking for that feeling, that overwhelming feeling to overcome them. And then they think that that is the motivation for them to do loving things. And it isn't. Being a parent is not being overcome with love and devotion. And I give them an example of when, you know, I got a call late one December night that my 15-year-old was at the police station. Was it love? Was it overwhelming, tender, maternal devotion that dragged my ass out of bed through the snow and to the police station to pick his ass up? No, it was the fact that I had made a commitment to parent this child.
Yep.
And of course I love him, but love and that overwhelming feeling is not it's not what drives me. It's not what drives us from day to day. Just like in a marriage, long-term relationship, that's not what drives you. It is a commitment. You make a commitment to this person to love them, which means to behave lovingly, not to always be sitting there with your eyes, you know, with hearts popping out of your eyes. And the parent-child relationship right at birth is not any different. And that's what people need to hear, that because they do feel like failures. Birthing people feel like failures when they're not, you know, the birthing room is not a Hallmark card.
Yep.
What's happening here? How come this doesn't feel like the commercial that I think it should be? Well, because it doesn't happen that way. Because that's not the way it works.
Because you're exhausted and you've been in labor for 3 days and everything fucking hurts. And you don't even know, like for me, I didn't even know whether he was going to live or die. Yeah. So it's like, I can't.
Where's the romance?
I can't throw my whole heart into that if I know it's going to get shattered. I need to make sure that everything is okay first. The practical side of my brain is like, I need to, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah,
I don't know how it would feel to feel safe in that feeling of not being in love right away, of not feeling that instant bond that everyone talks about, because it does happen. I've seen it happen. I've felt it with one of my kids, two of my kids, but with two of them, I also didn't feel it right away. It was a relationship to be built through action, and the other two, I did feel it, and fuck. You know, how awesome would it be for someone to have their baby and not have that feeling, or even have that feeling of, oh my God, no, I just got to turn off. Just strap this kid to me. We're going to sleep and feel okay.
Have five babies. When you have five babies, you get that happens.
Yeah, that's good.
That happens. The more babies you have, the more you realize, oh, okay, that's how it is afterwards. You stop looking for the Hallmark moment. At that, you know, you stop looking for it. And when it comes, it shows up. It shows up. I mean,
it is the Hallmark moment.
Pardon?
Being tired is the fucking Hallmark moment.
This is it.
You're tired.
This is it. We need to, images, ideas, and concepts of that those early few minutes of parenthood, / motherhood.
As you say, stop selling people a bill of goods that this is the ideal and this is what you should be striving for, when maybe that isn't even remotely possible because of economics, because of health, because of where you live, or, you know, your food insecurities.
Relationships or whatever.
Or your Or your hormones. Sometimes the hormones just don't line up for that at the moment. You know, they're like we are hormonal creatures. And depending on where you are in your flux, you can feel something. And sometimes you just can't. Someone can be doing all the right things that light you up generally. But that day, we're not feeling it.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's parenting, isn't it?
Yep. Yes.
What the hell? When you're pacing to 3 o'clock in the morning and the baby barfs in your face, you just need to go clean it up and keep going. You're not going to be driven by this fuel of romance and glamour and passion and love. That's not what it's all about.
No, that's not reality.
It's not reality. It's not life. And it's not what makes strong, long-lasting relationships. No long-lasting relationship is built on all the fuzzy, like, those things are nice and they show up and they come here and there. And when they do show up, it's beautiful and it's warm and you treasure them. But
and it's
then the baby barfs in your face and it's over.
Yeah. And that's okay too. But I mean, how ridiculous would life be if it was like that all the time? If it was, you would always be striving for more because that's what we
do.
No, exactly. Like if everything was all hearts and flowers and romance and love and, oh, beauty, how the fuck? That's not, you'd be living in this dream world and that's not necessarily a good thing.
I mean, Steph, you are happily married to the wonderful Roger. We have
useless nipples. Yes, I am.
It's useless nipples.
But that's
living with somebody inside a committed long-term relationship, yes, where you're picking up their sour socks off the floor and washing their shit-stained underwear. I mean, that's not so romantic. And you've got to love them through that.
I do. And you know, in regards to parenting, like, and there is the meme that goes around about useless nipples. And honestly, that could be said of whether you have a female partner or a male partner. You're looking over at the non-nursing part of your partnership going, you and your useless nipples, while the baby is crying and you're getting up again. Yeah. And it's honestly, sometimes it made me laugh to look over at him in his deep sleep. And other times I would kick him or I'd gouge him with my toenails and pretend to be sleeping, you know, because I was a little irate. But, you know,
the fact that you have toenails that can gouge people, I find highly problematic.
So does he.
I will forgive you now in the days of COVID, but I know that this was years ago when nail salons were open and functioning.
Yes.
Yes, they were. And I rarely went back then either. My feet are offensive. My feet are absolutely offensive.
You guys keep talking. I'll be back in a sec.
Okay. Now, the other thing that I wanted to bring up was this use of the term natural birth. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Natural birth. I think, you know what? I'm not 100% sure. I think glorification of natural birth, I have a problem with. I don't have a problem with people saying there's a particular way I want to approach birth. And that means I don't want augmentations or alterations. And I just want to let my body do what it wants to do. But it might be as natural for somebody to say that lack of control is highly triggering for me. And in order to feel controlled, what feels natural to me is to call up my OB and plan a family-centered cesarean where I am in on a date, I'm out on a date, I have things in place. So that feels natural to somebody else.
Right.
Like when you think natural, do you think just from a physiologic point of view? Do you think from a mental, emotional point of view?
I'm thinking about simply from a semantics point of view, because I do believe that language is power and language reflects culture and language reflects mindset. And when we use the term natural to describe one way of birthing, it implies that a different way of birthing is unnatural.
Ah, yes.
So that's the way that I'm looking at it. By using one word, you imply something else at the same time. So I try really hard in my classes and when I'm speaking to clients to be very specific about what I mean. Because when we use terms that are very, very broad, like natural, It implies a lot of things.
I hate that word.
Yes. She's back.
Let's say,
I'm back. I'm back. Yes.
If that's what we mean. I don't want an epidural. I want to do it on my own. Great. You want an unmedicated birth. That doesn't, it doesn't assume anything. It speaks specifically about what is happening on what the birthing person actually wants. If you say unmedicated, non-interventive, as few interventions as possible, because what it, natural to me might mean that I'm going to go squat in a lavender field and grunt my baby out by myself and eat my placenta right there in the grass. Natural for me.
Yeah.
And somebody else, natural means something else.
So, well, it's funny. I got a great letter email from a past, person who took my class, and were they, yes. So they were in a same-sex partnership. So, and I never made any statements or anything about, you know, my language or anything. I just went in and used partner, parent, medicated, unmedicated. And at one point somebody in the class had said, you know, well, if I have, you know, if I want to have a natural birth or something like that. And I said, okay, so you want to have an unmedicated birth, and corrected them basically. And they had sent this email to say, like, thank you so much for, you know, saying these things. And because it always made me feel that if I had an epidural, that I wasn't having a natural birth, that what I was doing was not a natural thing. And that's where it comes from, right? Where you feel like if you use the term natural, but you end up having a cesarean birth or you end up having a medicated birth, then what you did was not natural. Well, look, if your baby, if you had a baby inside you growing and then it came out, all that's natural. That's how you actually get to that point.
Whatever exit route your baby uses and the journey along the way are incidental. They're circumstances. It has nothing to do with the fact that you birthed a baby. That's it. You birthed a baby, and that is as natural as human beings. That's what we do. We birth babies, and that's what you did, period.
You birthed your baby.
Yes. So
I think you need to take maybe natural out of it altogether.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to have a place.
No.
Right. It doesn't seem to have a place at all, because whenever you use it, it implies that something different is unnatural.
That's right. And I mean, for this particular couple who were in a same-sex relationship, the natural way of putting a baby in did not occur.
Yeah.
And using that term negated their experience, and that's not fair.
So it negates people's relationships, because natural relationships, what we've been taught are natural, that will imply that too. If you use that word in terms of natural relationships, conception methods, what's natural and what's not natural, and normal and what's not normal. That was a thing at one point for people to refer to birth as normal physiologic birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that word normal is so, it holds such weight as well.
And physiologic birth, when in terms of meaning only vaginal birth, is also not true.
Yeah.
Cesarean section is a physiologic situation, incident. It is. The baby comes out, all the hormones still happen, the placenta comes out. And all the hormones still happen, that the body still makes milk, things move on. It's a different exit route. So I have kind of struggled and tried to find a word. I haven't succeeded. Find a word besides just plain old vaginal birth.
Yeah. That's vaginal birth, surgical birth, cesarean birth.
Yeah. Unmedicated.
Leave it up to the birthing person to describe how the fuck they felt about their birth, like whether they felt they had a natural birth, like if they felt they had a, you know, there's talk about removing the word cesarean, that it doesn't have a place. Some other people say belly birth. That certainly does not speak to me.
No, and you know what? It doesn't speak to a lot of people I've seen.
Yeah, other people. Somebody had a conversation,
and yet I've seen so many people be so anti belly birth. Like it's, but I wonder if it's that they've been through the journey of having a cesarean birth or having a surgical birth, and they own that.
They don't want to soften it up.
No, they own what they went through. They've been through it, and that's where their strength is coming from, is owning those words. Yes. For whatever their birth happens to be.
So saying I had a surgical birth. I had one surgical birth.
Yeah.
And then someone's able to put an add on to that. I had a well-supported surgical birth. I had a unnecessary surgical birth. I had a traumatic surgical birth. It just
be specific. Yes. Yeah. Be specific about the experience.
And I find that a lot of people who do feel comfortable using belly birth, it's interesting, they had good experiences. Often I've heard people who've had, like, their birth has felt supported, they're much more likely to use the word belly birth. But other people say it feels childish, like belly.
It feels that way to me.
Yeah, it feels like it's a childish word, belly. Like, yeah, your little belly. No, this is my womb. You know, it's not my belly.
It feels dismissive.
It feels dismissive. It feels dumbed down or childish. And those are,
yeah,
that's to me. So surgical birth just sounds like, and then I'm able to describe it however I want because it was a surgical birth.
Yes.
You know, I had an inverted T surgical birth. I didn't. Just some people can say they can add on to describe their birth. But it is, and for some people that feels like, again, they might have planned their surgical birth or they planned their belly birth and it felt natural for them to do so because of whatever circumstances they came into this with. But again, it takes away that, if we could just get rid of natural altogether, it felt good for them. It felt supported for them. It felt consent filled for them. It felt like the right path for them after growing this baby to make that decision to have this particular type of birth.
And I think that's why in my classes, at the very beginning, I always give the speech that, you know, on top of other things that I say, but I say, look, if your baby came out your vagina, if your baby came out your abdomen, if your baby came out your nose, you birthed. And however that journey happened for you, these are your decisions that are coming to that conclusion. So you are the director of this journey, and you get to decide what it's going to be like and how it's going to be for you. I'm not here to tell you how to give birth. I'm here to show you what your options are. Mm-hmm. And whatever that journey looks like for you, that's all yours. Yeah. And it will look different for everybody.
Yep. My wonderful friend, Julia Keeling, who passed away last November, she was the first person. Julia was quite a bit older than me. Julia had 4 children and all born surgically. And Julia was the first person who I heard consistently refer to her births as surgical births. She never called them cesarean sections. And God knows, you know, back in the 90s and early 2000s, the belly birth wasn't a thing. So she always referred to them as surgical births. And it fit. Julie was a very straightforward, precise, thorough person. And her use of the word surgical birth made so much sense because it exactly described what her birth was, with no dressing up, no connotations of anything else. This is what she means to say. If you wanted to know more about, was it a happy surgical birth, then she would talk about that. Was it a disappointing surgical birth? But if she was just talking about the birth and how it went, she had 4 surgical births. That's how her children came into the world, surgically, period. And I loved that preciseness of it, that preciseness of language. And that's what's kind of driven me to say unmedicated or whatever. Just say what you mean. Don't imply other things. Don't assume other things. Don't exclude, by your use of certain words, other people and other concepts.
Because try not to add, I don't know if what the word is I'm looking for, but like value to something if it's not yours.
Yes. Avoid value.
Not yours.
Sorry? Yep.
Yes. If it's not yours, don't assume.
No, yeah.
Where the value lies.
And I mean, that's really key with being a doula as well, is you may think that that birth went horrible. But if that birthing person feels that that was a great birth and that they feel like they accomplished what they needed to accomplish to bring forth this human into the world and they're good with it, then who are we to devalue that experience for them by saying, oh, it's too bad you had a cesarean, you know, or, you know, or again, adding into, you know, calling it, maybe they want to call it a cesarean birth. Maybe they want to call. So when you have those, particularly for postpartum doulas who may not have been at the birth, when you sit down with them and you ask them, how did your birth go? You just wait for that information to come and you model it back how it was sent to you.
Yeah. I mean, I've recently had a situation where a client had an unmedicated, obviously she had a home birth planned with a midwife and she had all of these, you know, holistic remedies and stuff to help her through her labor. Anyway, she ended up having to go to the hospital to get Pitocin, then an epidural, then a cesarean section. So in my head, I was like, oh my gosh, disappointment. She must be so disappointed. She planned all of this. She planned all of that. And I was delightfully surprised when I spoke to her and asked her how she felt about the process and the birth experience, that she, although she was disappointed that her plans didn't go the way that she wanted, she was very appreciative of the fact that every step of the way she felt supported by her midwives, by her partner, and she had her eyes wide open and she participated in all the discussions and she was just now absolutely thrilled to have her baby here, and any quote unquote hang-ups that she might have about how her birth turned out, quote unquote, she let go because she was thrilled. Now, mind you, that was her experience. Other people will feel differently. But how horrible would it have been for me to harp on that disappointment?
Exactly.
And to, because I wanted that home birth for her.
Yep.
But she said to me, it's okay. I'm happy with the way things turned out. Now that they've turned out, I'm able to let go of that disappointment. And I'm cool. Then I need to be cool with that too. And I need to not use language that puts value judgment on her experience.
Yeah. Or devalues her experience.
Or devalues her experience. Exactly.
I had a client too, actually, that had a home birth planned and it just did not go the way it was supposed to. And she ended up hospital transfer, having a cesarean birth, and baby being taken to NICU right away. Mm-hmm. So she didn't even have that. And partner went with baby to the NICU. And I stayed with her in the recovery room. And she was happy and smiling. And I was crushed inside. Yep. And I go, are you okay? And she goes, yeah, no, this was a really great experience. This was, she, because she felt supported, because she was the one that made the decisions, because yes, people asked for what she wanted throughout yes, the entire experience, she felt that that was a great experience for her. And even though it was the complete opposite of everything that she wanted, she felt cared for and heard.
Yeah. That's what makes the difference.
Exactly. It doesn't necessarily matter how baby comes out. It's the journey that you take to get to that point. And if you feel, and maybe this is very judgy of me to say this, if you feel supported, cared for, listened to, that you are part of the decision-making team, that's massive. And that's what I want for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have all of that, have excellent support, feel absolutely wonderful, heard, and all of those things, and still at the end,
absolutely
be upset with how with that, that this is where you are, that you are post-surgery, that you are post-whatever it is.
It's okay to not be okay.
It is okay to not be okay. It is okay to be upset that your labor went so fast that you didn't get the epidural you wanted.
Yeah.
It is okay for it to have been so long and so hard on you emotionally and physically that you're not okay with it. And at the same time, be able to say, my team did everything they knew to do. And I still feel this way. It's okay to have both, to experience both, to sit in both. And even more so, it's okay. It's beyond okay to say that out loud and to have someone say, absolutely. Use your language. You, as a birthing person, say out loud that that was long and hard and I thought I would feel differently. Say it.
And what's not okay is to have the will and the guts and the bravery to say those things out loud, that you're not okay with this, and to have somebody say, but you have a healthy baby.
Mm-hmm. Fuck them.
Like, yeah, like that's not fair. My feelings are valid and I am allowed to say these things and I am allowed to be okay, to not be okay with everything that happened, despite having a healthy baby. Yes, I have a healthy baby. However, I'm not okay with all this other stuff.
However, I also feel these things.
Yeah.
People don't seem to realize that it's possible and acceptable to have more than one feeling at the same time about a certain situation.
You can live with 2 feet on either side of that line. It's okay to experience all of that stuff. And it's not okay for somebody to say, you're not allowed to feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're out there listening, be the person who listens to that thing openly, who listens openly to someone say that to you, and really resist that need to fix it. Just sit and listen.
Well, that's why whenever somebody tells me something, this is what happened, X, Y, Z. And Suzanne, I did this with you yesterday when you gave us that information. And I said, the first thing I said was, so how do you feel about all of that?
Because
that's what I want to know. I want to know how I'm going to respond to you. How do you're going to tell me your birth story. How do you feel about all that? Mm-hmm. When a client says, oh, they want to do X, Y, Z, blah, blah, blah. I don't go, oh, really? That sucks. I go, okay, how do you feel about that?
How do you feel about that? Yeah, my midwife wants to do a stretch and sweep at 38 weeks. My first response is going to be, what the fuck? What a stupid idea. No, don't say that.
I'm going to delete all that in the text and go, how do you feel about all that?
Yeah. So how do you feel about that suggestion?
Exactly.
I do love to reply to clients when they say something like, I can't believe you were so calm through all of that. And I'm like, can you imagine if I was that doula and went, holy shit, right? That's horrible. That was a huge contraction.
I have had too many holy shit moments happen just inside my head and then go home and like vomit it all out to my husband when together and just go, holy shit, what the fuck? I mean we saw last year, you know, how all the couple of holy shit moments I had that pretty much driven me into retirement. But it's like, but everybody always says, everything was so great. You were so calm and so relaxed. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I'm literally, my heart is constricting and I'm screaming in my head, but I'm a doula. How do you feel about it?
You're a doula.
Feel about all that?
Oh, you guys, I got to tell you, I got to go take a nap.
Yeah. I got to go take my son to work. I have a screaming headache.
I don't have a headache.
My eyelids are shut down.
I do have. Well, we're not going to say what the topic is because you know us. We'll change it.
Yes. Who knows what will come up over the week?
Surprise!
Oh, did we announce the new book club? Did we say it last week?
Should we say it again?
Say it again because people sometimes don't listen, or maybe they didn't listen to last week's episode.
I don't remember what it's
called. How dare you missing an episode?
Sorry, I haven't.
What's it called again?
I'm going to get it. It is I sent you a picture of it. Oh, here it is. The Pull of the Stars by Emma Donahue.
Right. The Pull of the Stars.
Which I haven't started yet. I can't afford to buy a new book yet. I need to get paid.
You're not allowed. I'm not allowed to buy a new book because I've got a stack of new books on my night table.
I'm reading the Harriet Tubman story. I've told you guys. Mm-hmm. And I've been reading it the last few days. I can only read a couple pages at a time because I usually pass out. But I was struck by how there's that whole saying of, you know, if we do not learn from the past, we repeat it. And I am struck by reading this book at how what's happening then and what's happening now, particularly in Portland, is they're mirror images, mm-hmm. of people being rounded up and kidnapped, slaves being rounded up and kidnapped,
yeah.
Like the protesters are being rounded up and kidnapped in Portland.
Yeah.
And in Harriet Tubman's time, where there were groups of Quakers that were protecting slaves and whatnot. Yeah. And now we have groups of moms and mm-hmm. dads in a row protecting protesters. It's like, I'm reading it going, yep, yep, yep. Oh, shit. What the fuck? We never learned anything. Look, that dog is too cute and too small.
She's 3.4 pounds now. Right, Dick?
Here, we're going to take your picture for the thing.
Chee-chee-chee.
She's adorable.
Isn't she? It's so cutie.
Very cute.
Hum.
Big yawn. All right. Anyways, so I've been wanting to say that forever, how I'm struck by we have not learned anything in the last 200 years.
Yep.
So.
Unfortunately.
So there you go.
Work still needs to happen.
Yes.
Someone just left my house. Why are people leaving my house?
I don't know.
Usually you don't like it when people come to your house.
Why do you care if they're leaving?
Yes.
Because it's likely my children.
Mm-hmm. They're running away.
Oh, baby.
All right. So the Pull of the Stars. We will see you next week.
Be safe.
We love you. Be safe. Wash your hands.
Use good language.
Don't be an asshole. That's our new tagline. Don't be an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We love you.
Bye.
Bye.